Welcome to the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This podcast connects people affected by a blood cancer to resources that inform, support, educate, and empower. When it comes to cancer, it's hard to navigate the unknown, and there are no easy answers. We're here to bring you the information you need to help make sense of every step of the blood cancer experience. My name is Montana Skirka, and I will be your guest host for today's episode. I work in the community as a certified yoga and meditation teacher and integrative wellness educator with a focus on providing patients with a holistic approach to mental health and well-being. I currently work with folks one-on-one and run self-care circles for teen self-esteem and chronic illness in Toronto. As a childhood cancer survivor, I am dedicated to helping others navigate their journey to health and wellness through coaching, mindful movement, and group facilitation. Today on the show, I am talking to Shay Lin Wei. Shay Lin is 24 years old, born and raised in the small town of Tamworth, Ontario. She graduated in psychology from the University of Ottawa. Shay Lin was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia in March 2020 when she was 21 years old. She had many setbacks and battles during her cancer journey, first undergoing an allostem cell transplant, a relapse which led to a CAR T transplant, and then another relapse led to immunotherapy and a second allo stem cell transplant. Shay Lin is now recovering well and excited to chat with us about how to physically, mentally, and emotionally prepare for treatment. Hi, Shay Lin. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hi, Montana. Thank you so much for having me.
So first of all, just talking about, you know, what it was like at the beginning of the pandemic being diagnosed with cancer. What were you doing at the time? How did you receive the news, and how did you respond to that?
Yeah, it had happened so fast. Like, all of a sudden COVID was such a big thing back in 2020, and I had gone on a trip with my sister, my boyfriend, and my sister and her boyfriend, and then another couple in February. And I was in fourth year university at U Ottawa. And then fast forward to like the middle of March, I started feeling really, really sick. And I had the worst migraines. I get the odd headache here and there, but I would never get migraines this terrible that like I couldn't even get out of bed. The lighting in the hallways at school would bug me. So I just like kind of kermited like up into my bed, and I didn't leave. And then as this is going on, classes are kind of starting to go online because the coronavirus was coming such a big thing. So I kind of got lucky in that sense that school was going online, because I couldn't even go to school because of my migraines. And that lasted for about 2 weeks. And then near the end of the 2 weeks, more symptoms started to show. Like, I was getting really, really short of breath. Like, I couldn't even walk up a flight of stairs without like needing to sit down and put my head down. So these were all really weird symptoms, and we just really couldn't figure out what it was. And we thought maybe it was COVID, because it was kind of all the symptoms that they were saying COVID was. I had fevers, I had chills, I was short of breath. So I had the migraine, the headache. They thought that was COVID too, right? So at that time, they were only testing people who had traveled outside of the country in the last 2 weeks. And we had traveled in the last 3 weeks. So they wouldn't test me because it had been 3 weeks. Yeah. So then we kind of, because we thought it was COVID, so we ruled that out. And then finally, after 2 weeks, they finally did blood tests. They were just so scared of COVID. So after three different hospital visits, 2 different weeks, finally got blood work done. And that was when I was diagnosed with leukemia, right? And then the day I was diagnosed was the day that everything shut down. Everything went into lockdown and no visitors allowed in the hospital. So it was quite a first experience, that's for sure.
Wow. And how were you feeling at that time? I mean, So you're alone. You've just been diagnosed with cancer. You're not allowed any visitors. Everyone's so scared about COVID that they're not even like giving you the blood tests you need. And then next thing you know, it's cancer. Like, how are you feeling at that time?
I was feeling really scared. I was almost more frustrated, I think, than anything, because I've always been a kind of like a go-getter, as my mom would explain me as. Always, you know, I never liked to skip class. I never liked to miss work. I was always on time, and I had to call into work. I had to like skip out on my class and like my class projects because I couldn't go to school. And so I was feeling really defeated and really, really frustrated. And I felt like no one was taking me seriously. Like all the different hospital visits that we had, my mom had even suggested blood work. And they said, oh, no, we don't think it's needed, because everyone was so scared of COVID. They didn't want to do anything extra. So it was really frustrating. So it was almost like a relief, kind of, in a sense. And I hate to say that when I got diagnosed, but it was like we have an answer to why I'm feeling this way, because it kind of got so bad that I didn't know how long I would have made it. It was after the 2 weeks of just having the really bad symptoms from the leukemia itself, I was feeling quite down.
I can certainly relate to aspects of that, like of, you know, feeling relieved to get an answer. Even if the answer is really scary, it's something that you can kind of then treat, right? When you're feeling so sick and there you don't know why, and especially the invalidation, right? Because you know how bad you're feeling and nobody seems to be taking it seriously.
Exactly.
And that's a horrifying experience to have to kind of like justify your existence and explain these internal sensations to people who don't seem to understand or know what to do.
Yes, that's definitely how I felt. And I felt like no one was taking me seriously, even in my family. Like nothing, as my parents, my mom was taking me to the hospital. But I felt like no one got how bad I actually felt. And when it did come out that it was leukemia, everyone was like, that makes sense why she felt so terrible. And I was like, I told you, I knew something was wrong at the time. Like I knew there was something wrong, and I was relieved almost just to find an answer, but then, you know, frustrated that the answer had to be that. But
of course. And I think this is a good kind of message for everyone to just remember that, like, we know our bodies best, and to just make sure that we advocate for ourselves.
Of course. Yes.
So you're diagnosed. I mean, the theme of this episode is how to prepare for treatment. I'm assuming you didn't know that much about this disease before you were diagnosed or about the treatment. So how did you prepare, and what was it like getting this first stem cell transplant?
I can say that the first year of my diagnosis was definitely the hardest of probably all of the years. And I would say physically, it was the hardest. I had lived in a 2-bedroom apartment up in Gatineau before I was diagnosed. And I lived with my friend, and I was very independent. I go get my own groceries. I could get myself to school either through the bus system or through my car. Like, I made my own dinners. I was very independent. And so going from being so independent at 21 years old to being dependent on my entire family was a huge shift for me. Like, that was something that took a long time for me to accept, just because I liked my independence. And that is definitely what pushed me down, I would say, mentally, just knowing that I lost that independence and there was nothing I could do to get it back. I was in the hospital from March 20th, 2020 to May 1st, 2020. So at that time, I wasn't allowed any visitors. The floor was great that I was on, that they kind of let my mom come and go sometimes. And so the longest she was there straight was 40 days, I think, 45 days. She stayed on a cot next to me. But there was times when I was there that she actually got kicked out and asked to leave, and I was alone, and it was quite scary, like, doing everything on your own. I knew I was independent, but not that independent to take chemo by myself, and, you know, just having that support, it was scary. And I ended up getting, in that month of April, I ended up getting 4 hospital infections at the same time. And I remember the one doctor saying, the infectious disease doctor saying, oh, if you had got the 5th one, you would have died. And I remember I just freaked right out. I couldn't control myself. I did not need to hear that, being in the state I was in from the other 4. And so when we had cleared up those 4 infections, well, what they thought they had cleared up, actually, I discovered a really bad pain in my right thigh, and it was not going away. And we did physio, and this whole time I'm in the hospital, and they sent me home on May 1st. I had all this pain in my right leg. I would say it was the most excruciating pain I've ever had in my life. And I will always compare every bone marrow biopsy that I ever get, or lumbar puncture, or any procedure, to that pain, because it was so bad. And it actually ended up being 3 pockets of infection from those 4 infections. So they created pockets in my legs, and they were like shell-like. So the antibiotics couldn't go through or puncture them to, like, kind of break up the infection. And so they were just growing, and my leg and the edema was just growing, and it was, the pain was unbearable. So once they finally figured it out, what they were, I had to have a procedure done to drain them. And that was quite the process. That was a 7-day process in the hospital of draining these things in my inside my legs. That was May of 2020, and that whole summer I just had to learn how to walk again because of the damage that the edema did to my legs. So I will say that was a hard first start at my diagnosis.
Wow. That's that's so much. And so if I understand correctly, they sent you home with that much pain? Like, feel like, because it kind of sounds like this theme of feeling like maybe you're not being taken seriously, or your pain's not being acknowledged. Like, did you feel that way leaving, or did you want to leave at that time?
Yeah. So I was, when they had said that I could leave on May 1st, my goal was to get home by May 5th, because my birthday was May 5th. But as we kind of got closer to that day, I realized, like, my legs aren't getting smaller. Like, I'm doing everything that the doctors are telling me to do to get rid of this, and this pain is still here. So when they said that I could go home, I was really shocked. I was scared. I was really scared because I had changed. Like, my body itself had just gone through so much and was still going through so much. I remember just the edema on my stomach and my lower half, like, feeling so uncomfortable in my body, and something I definitely was not prepared to experience. And so being told that I can go home when I'm feeling and looking like this was really scary, because I knew when I went home, I was going to see my dad and my sister and my boyfriend, and my we're close with my aunt and uncle and my cousins, and, like, they had never seen me like this, and this was, like, a whole new level of, like, not good. Like, it was bad, and I felt really self-cautious about it, and I did warn everybody with it before I came home, but I ended up in the hospital 3 days later, and that's when they figured out the problem, that there was the pockets in my legs. So, and I spent 14 days after that in the hospital.
Wow. And it also sounds like, you know, part of this story, I wonder, is the healthcare system at that time being so strained that, you know, they're not able to provide the support that they normally would, right? And it's just so unfair that you had to go through this much pain and suffering alone a lot of the time, especially at this time. Being in a hospital must have just been, like, awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I definitely feel that the healthcare system was not focused. I didn't get the care and the focus that I needed to at the beginning of my early, like, with the diagnosis. I will say that they were definitely short-staffed, and I did get overlooked a little bit, just thinking it was muscle pain or something. But never, like, the nurses that I did have were absolutely amazing. I could never say anything more nice about them. I love them so much. And they really did try to make me comfortable, because really they saw that there was nothing that they could do much, right? It was up to the doctors, and they were just trying to make me feel comfortable and get to A to B and without as much pain, you know, and get to the bathroom and get up. But yes, I definitely think that during the initial diagnosis, I was 100% overlooked, and blood work could have been done a week earlier. But since COVID was such a new thing and so unsure about it, I definitely feel that that's why I didn't get my blood work or as early as I should have.
Yeah, I love what you said about the nurses. There's literally nothing, I don't know, there's nothing better than, like, when you're in that state and there's just that special nurse that you can just tell really cares. I still to this day feel so grateful for certain nurses that I've had at my time in the hospital. They're literally angels in human form. So I completely understand that.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. And they're – yes. And we always go, my mom and I always go out of our way on special occasions to get them something nice, like just to make them feel and know that they're appreciated, because they definitely make or break a situation, especially when you're feeling that way. And I know I couldn't say anything bad about any of the nurses that I've had so far over actually the last almost 3 years now. So they are angels.
So you are now at home. You've had multiple infections that have been wreaking havoc. They're drained and they're healing, and you're back home. So kind of walk us through what it was like from then until the relapse and that next treatment and how you prepared for that.
I did more chemo after I went home that summer. And then I went up to Ottawa at the end of the summer, so middle of August. And we went up and I had my first stem cell transplant. My sister was my donor. So it was really, really special, because my sister and I, she's 3 years older, but we are like two peas in a pod. She was a perfect match. And it was really special because me and her are really close and we're pretty much best friends. It was really special for her to be able to give me that gift. So I had my stem cell transplant, and we had to stay up in Ottawa for 100 days. Post-transplant. So we were up there until the middle of November. And then when we got to come home, that was kind of like the start of trying to live life normal again. Like, that was it. Like, I just had to go and do blood work every, like, week or so when I was on a chemo pill. But mostly I was living life back normal, growing my hair out again. So that lasted until October 2021. So I had really enjoyed my summer in 2021, and I went back to school. I just had a couple more courses I had to finish up in order to graduate. So I went back to school, but then in October 2021 is when I relapsed again. This time around, I don't think there was one thing that really stood out to me that made me realize, okay, like, I think I've relapsed or I need to go get blood work. I think it was just, you know, I just really wasn't feeling good for the month of October. I felt really tired and really low and not a lot of energy. And I had just started a job at an agency and I was working 12-hour shifts. So it was a lot. That was kind of coming down on me a lot too. I had to call in because I was feeling so terrible. So it was the end of October 2021 when the blood work came back and my doctor called me and told me that I had relapsed. So that's not a great call. No, I don't wish that call on anybody ever. So.
Of course. How did you feel in that moment? And what were the next steps?
I can't even explain how I felt. It was like it all, everything just sunk in my stomach. Like, felt like my heart went to the bottom of my stomach. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Like, and then it kind of goes back to the thoughts of why me? And, but I have realized that there is one thing I'm really good at, and it is good at, I am good at having my moment of time to let it out and express myself emotionally when I'm and what I'm feeling. When I get news like that, I definitely know that I need my space and I need time. But that after, I really am good at jolting myself back into the right mindset and being like, okay, like, you've cried about it, it sucks, but now we gotta get into gear because we need to do exactly what we just did. We need to, like, beat this again. So I'm sad for a while, for a bit. And then, like, a part of me, the, like, go-getter Shay part of me takes over. And it's like, okay, snap out of this. You're strong. You've done this before. So you can do this again. So that's kind of my mentality when I would relapse.
That's a beautiful, I mean, first of all, wise beyond your years. And also just such a beautiful way to kind of frame it, right? That, like, part of preparing for treatment is to say, okay, like, we need to process our emotions and we need to be allowed to have emotions about this very, very scary human experience that is not fair. And then to have that balance of, like, okay, giving yourself time and also knowing what you need. I think that's a good tip for people, right? Because some people might not need space. Some people might want to be around people all the time. Some people might need space. Like, really listen to your body and say, like, what do you need right now? Do you need to cry into a pillow? Do you need to, like, get someone to drive you to an open field so you can start screaming? Like, what do you need? I actually highly recommend that second one. I've done it before. It's really fun. and then also having the mentality of, like, okay, I also am not probably going to process all of this right now because I need to also have that part of me that says, okay, what do we actually have to do? What are the steps that are needed? So what was that next treatment like, and how did you continuously prepare and help yourself through that?
Yeah. So right after I got that phone call, we kicked it into gear and we're like, what are we going to do here? Everybody. So I refer to them as Kid 9 nurses, but it's the floor in at Kingston General Hospital is where I go. And it's just the floor that I always go to. And so right away, like, they're just the most supportive people. They're my people, right? Like, they're my nurses. They're my doctors. They know me from the beginning. So I definitely knew I had a good team on with me. And so right away we went into gear and we're like, what are we going to do? And so he had mentioned that this new CAR T therapy, I qualified for it because I was under 25. You had to be under 25 and you had to have had an allo stem cell transplant and it had failed, which it had. And then you had to have acute lymphoblastic leukemia, ALL, which I also had. So I was a perfect candidate. So he said, we're going to go ahead and we're not going to do any chemo. We're just going to do this CAR T transplant. he said we could do light chemo, but part of the program with the CAR T is that you don't do heavy chemo before because they want you strong for the transplant. So on November 17th, I went up and I got my cells taken from me and they got sent to New Jersey. It was New Jersey. And they got modified. And then on December 27th, I got them put back into me. And they are trained to fight my cancer cells, my leukemia cells. So it is incredible. If any, like, read more about it, because it is an incredible therapy. The only thing is that they were only doing, like, little tiny bits of chemo. So they weren't doing enough chemo. I didn't lose my hair. All the hair I had grown back in the last year and a half was, growing, and I didn't have to lose it. I just thinned out, but without having the chemo to fight off the leukemia kept kind of growing, and the side effects from that were almost as bad as chemo side effects. I was feeling really, really tired. I was feeling really, really short of breath, and this is all from a leukemia. I was headaches, and I felt like groggy and like fuzzy. I remember one night, it was to a point where if I had to shower, like my mom or my boyfriend, I had to be around just in case I fell, and we had assisted devices in the shower to help me. But I remember I passed out in the shower and my boyfriend literally had to pull me out and sit me down and kind of let me come back because I was feeling so sick from the leukemia. So it was a really hard time leading up to the transplant. I just wanted to get it done. And to add on to it, it was just around Christmas, right? And it was just a really bad time. So once I got the CAR T transplant, though, my outlook was really good. Mentally, like, I was doing really well and I had got the cells, so I was ready. All I have to do is recover and we can get on with life, you know? And it was more closer to the end of our time up in Ottawa and this recovery time that you had to stay up there isolated that I started to emotionally and mentally break down. And I was like, okay, I'm ready to go home. Like, I'm done. I'm done with all this transplant. So, yeah, that was the first relapse. At the end of January 2022, I was officially in remission.
And how did you feel once you were declared in remission? And did you kind of just say, okay, now I have to go back to normal life? What was that transition like?
The recovery wasn't as bad, I guess, with the CAR T. I felt like I recovered pretty fast. But when I got home, I think I pushed myself a little too much. I just really wanted to get back. So I started a job just as a substitute teacher in the school board. And I only got to work two shifts because then again, I started to feel really, really sick. And took a COVID test. It wasn't COVID. And did blood tests. And at the end of May, I was told that I was told by the same doctor. I was sitting in the same spot. Yeah, he told me that I had relapsed again. So I think this one hurt the most. I was just like so sure that I was like on my way to being like normal, like getting back to my life. And so again, it was May 2022.
Wow. And so what was this third process like for you? How did you prepare and what was going through your mind and what was it like?
Yeah, this one was hard because I had already done this twice. And I at the beginning, when I was first relapsed, they didn't say their plans. Like, they just thought that they wanted to do immunotherapy. They didn't know what the future, like after the immunotherapy. So they did immunotherapy in the summer. So I had that from June until October. And it was, I got to carry it around. So it was attached to my pick line, and it was a bag and a pump. And it was this continuous, for 28 days, continuous treatment that I went in every other day and got it. The bag changed up, and it was always pumping into me for 28 days. So I carried this bag around all summer, and I called it Blinny because it's nickname. Well, it's the name of the treatment was Blinatumomab. So I gave it a nickname, and it was my little buddy all summer, right? Because I had to carry it around all summer. I was quite thankful that I didn't have straight drip chemo, because I was able to keep my hair all summer. Like, the immunotherapy didn't knock me down. It did at the beginning, but in the summer, once I was on like my third cycle, I was able to live my normal life and still have treatment. And all I had to do was just carry this bag around. I was okay with that. So I did have a great summer on treatment. I was happily surprised. And then they told me that they wanted to do another stem cell transplant, and they wanted to do an allo again. And they thought the best bet was to use an unknown donor's cells and not my sister's, just because it had failed the first time. So I was not in a good spot or mindset when they told me that. That was definitely hard to hear after just a year and a half ago going through all of that. Like, I did not think I could do it again. I didn't think my body physically could take it again after all it's taken. And then I didn't think emotionally I could do it, which was really hard because I've really been good emotionally and I've been really positive, and mentally I've kept that positive outlook on everything. But this time I just felt really defeated. Like, this is my third time with cancer, and I'm only 24. Like, and I wrote about this in my blog post that is mentioned on the Leukemia Lymphoma Society's website, that I had to switch my whole mentality around to get through this treatment. I had to kind of jolt myself back, because there was about a week or so of just really bad emotions. And I think it just clicked one day that mentally I had to put myself mentally in my mindset that this is going to work and that I need to stay positive. And I said, you need to take this one day at a time. Like, you can't be looking and thinking about the mouth sores that you're going to get in 2 weeks, because you got them last time. Because I had already gone through this treatment. So it was almost like a blessing and a curse, because I knew what to expect, but I also knew how bad it could have been, it could get. And I've also talked to many people who had really bad experiences with stem cell transplants. So my thoughts were getting the best of me, for sure. But I definitely had to put myself in a different mindset if I was going to get through it. For sure. And one day it clicked. I don't know what it was. And I was just like, no, like, if I want to make it through this, I'm going to have to jolt myself back and kind of look at this from one perspective and think positive. So it was definitely a lot harder, but here I am on day 85, I think it is, post-transplant, and I'm doing really well.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. And I'm so happy to hear that. I just keep thinking about how wise and strong you are beyond your years, you know, to have made it through and really taken it upon yourself to say, you know what, like, I'm gonna take this on. Like, this is not gonna beat me, you know. And I think this thing that we recognize when we go through these challenges that are internal and in our bodies. It's like, we have all the support, but it kind of comes down to us, right? And that's a sobering thought 100%. For a 24-year-old. Like, most people, a lot of people don't, you know, realize this until they're much, much, much older. you know, I also think that there's this common theme that seems to come up whenever I chat with cancer patients, myself included, that we're such go-getters, a lot of us, and we push ourselves so much further than we need to. And I just hope this is a reminder and message to you and to everyone, like, you don't have to push yourself, you know, like, you are whole, you are worthy. You don't have to wait until you're sick, you know, to like take a break and yeah. relax, and like, you deserve it. If anyone deserves it, you deserve it, right? So I just want to thank you so much, Shay, for taking the time to talk to us today. If listeners have any questions about this podcast or need any support or resources to navigate your experience, I encourage you to connect with the community services lead in your region. For more information, visit bloodcancers.ca. If you liked our podcast, be sure to just subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcasts. We also welcome any ideas for our program, so we would love to hear from you. Send us an email with your suggestions or comments at info@bloodcancers.ca. Thank you to TELUS Friendly Future Foundation for generously sponsoring today's episode, and another huge thank you to Shay Lynn for joining us today. And I do want to say that you should definitely check out her blog, and I'm sure we can connect that in the show notes. So until next time, stay well and stay connected.